This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. I'm Christine Wong. Now, when it comes to looking at your company's organizational strategies, it can be really difficult to make heads or tails of the best way to approach them. So today, I'm here with Hetal Doshi Suhana Daswani, organizational psychologist, certified professional coach, and certified trainer, to talk about the concept of organizational psychology. So first of all, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Christine, for having me.
No worries. So it sounds like the obvious question to ask, but you are an organizational psychologist.
Yes.
What is organizational psychology? How would you explain that?
But if you put two and two together, organizational psychology, it's basically trying to understand the psychology of an organization. Really, the word psychology came from Greek meaning psyche. Basically, the soul and the spirit of a human being within the space of work. So what an organizational psychologist does is pretty much two things. I think, you know, if you ask any human being at all what it is that they want at work, they probably come down to two things. One is, I want to be successful at what it is that I do. And the other one is that I want to make sure that I'm happy while I'm doing it. And so we break it down to four things. Really, what an organizational psychologist does is to look at four different things. So one is control. So how much of control and power do I have within the organization, which is what most people want in life as well. The second is, we want to have a meaningful life at work, such that pretty much even when you go for holiday, you're like, I miss my job. I don't know whether that is an experience where most people have. The third one would be ultimately growth as well. So how do I grow in this organization? And this part of it is pretty interesting. It's not just about growth in terms of promotions and in terms of money, but also, am I becoming a better human being as we go along? Lastly, it is so much to do with connectedness. So how connected I feel with my peers. So really, when we try and understand human behavior, we try and understand it in these four terms.
You know, I think those are all qualities of work life that people do really appreciate and value, but may not necessarily think about all the time.
Yeah.
Especially nowadays, where jobs are really hard to find and the economy is so overly saturated with so much, it can be a bit difficult to actually put those as priorities in your life, yeah. I think, as well.
Absolutely. I guess the stressors are not only on the outside, but even when you're in the workplace itself, there's huge amounts of stressors that can come to you. And so organically, these four things might not pop up in a day-to-day scenario.
So let's talk about how you would apply these things to a business. So let's focus on a startup model first.
Yeah, maybe I'll start with an example of a client that we're working with right now. So there is a difference between HR and organizational psychology, which I guess we would talk about a little bit later. One of the things that we do is we come in and use two methodologies. We use a lot of scientific principles, so lots of data, lots of profiling, lots of assessment. And these are typically validated and made reliable over long periods of time. So we use methodologies as such. And the other one is pure observation. So we like literally look at a person and make observations about how they're behaving in that scenario. And this can be applied in many ways. So say, for example, you know, a town hall is going on, or we come into a startup, we observe how everybody's looking at the CEO. Some of them might be listening attentively, some might not be listening at all, some might be murmuring, some might be gossiping. We also look at eye rolls, so how many times you roll your eyes. And then eventually we make very strong cases and arguments as to the kind of spirit and the kind of enthusiasm that takes place within that startup itself towards a specific goal that the leader has put in place. So you can imagine a goal is a goal is a goal, but the kind of enthusiasm and spirit that you bring into it can make the world of a difference. And we do that, yes, predominantly through two different methods. One is the scientific one, which is where we get lots of data from people, and the other one is through observation.
See, I find that really interesting that you can kind of walk into a company and look at the way that the employees are responding to the employer or the CEO or the managing director or whoever, right? And that can tell you a lot about how the company works as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's actually really, really fascinating to me. And I really appreciate it's not just all about data analysis, because that can only tell you so much about a person after a point.
Yeah.
You can have all the data in the world on them, but it will never tell you anything about their personality or the way they interact with other people or the relationships that they have. So I think making sure that you look at both aspects of it, both observationally and scientifically, gives you a lot more of a holistic idea of where to work with.
Hugely, yeah. I think what you're saying is data, and then the other part is direction.
Yeah.
So what are we using, and how are we using that to progress in terms of a direction as well?
Okay, yeah. So let's go into that in a little bit more detail.
Yeah.
So let's focus on the direction stuff first.
Yeah.
So what exactly, I mean, you mentioned a few things earlier as well, like eye rolls and things like that, but what are some other specifics that you look for when it comes to observation?
Okay, so there are three things, specifically three things that we look at. I mean, eye roll is just one of the many, many things, which is very observable. example. I think in Malaysia, what is a very interesting phenomena is that the say-do quotient is quite low. What that means is when people say certain things, it may not necessarily be what they do in the end. And so we try and look at three things, three observations that we make. One is the mental state. So what is going on in the head while a person's speaking, communicating, or when it is their time to get a job done. The second part is the emotion. So what kind of emotions they bring into the space of work that they're doing. And lastly, the behaviors. So we try to do diagnostics on these three things. It doesn't mean that the person's behavior would be the same as how they're feeling and therefore how they're thinking. So we try to penetrate all the way down into what they're thinking and how they're thinking. And normally we end up doing reports based on these three different states in an organization. And therefore, this is when the transformation takes place. So we look at the current state, cognitive or mental, emotional and behavioral. And then we look at the future desired state as well. And that's where we come in smack in the middle of it between the current and the future. And we design certain types of experiences to transform that. So say, for example, earlier we were talking about, you know, a CEO making a speech or a town hall session. Current state might be that people are, meh, it's okay. It's fine, you know. But the future state, you want it to be transformational. You want it to be revolutionary so that even if the person's speaking for just about 10 minutes, you want to create huge impact. And so when we come in, we look at the right smack in the middle, which is what is that moment where we need to redesign the experience that people get so that they will have a new way of thinking about the CEO or the leader, a new way of feeling about the CEO. And lastly, pretty much immediately after the speech, their gut is in a motion where they're quite enthusiastic to do what is said.
Okay. Yeah. So how would you go about making that sort of transformation?
So very simply, I guess, you know, there's so many examples. So say, for example, in a speech itself, I think one of the most amazing things that's happening in the Malaysian market is transformation. Most companies are trying to transform themselves. And one of the greatest, most significant ways to transform an organization is through speech. So when we look at all the data out there, it literally is about how the leader speaks. And if you look at Martin Luther King, just one statement of his has lived on for centuries. And so what we did with a couple of CEOs that we work with is we tried to convince them that speech is really important. But of course, you know, most of them would say, but I'm not the best speaker. I'm not really interested in something like this. So ultimately, it's not about what we talk about. It's what we do. So we come in with a design, right? So how do we raise the awareness of the CEO about his impact on other people when he's speaking and ultimately what kind of more powerful impact he can have? So with one of the CEOs that we work with, we started taking all video recordings, putting that together, and we rated that against likability as well as impact. So we looked at it both ways. So we showed, for example, a group of 10 people a video about speech A, speech B, speech C, and we get them to rate how much of impact it had on them. And we present this to the CEO, and then he begins to realize that, okay, so I'm speaking for 10 minutes. This is the cost of my salary. Obviously not making any impact. Now what do I do? So first and foremost, it is an awareness and then the will that you want to transform. First and foremost as a CEO. Then after that, it's the skill building. So we take the person through lots of things, and really what makes a great speech in the end is not about the speech itself, but the hours of preparation before that. Everyone knows doing a 10-minute is really, really much harder than doing an hour. And so we put the person through lots of preparation to get them to that space as well. And in just that 10 minutes, he transforms not himself only, but maybe tens of thousands of people who might be working under him.
It's not just about what you do or what you say. It's also about how you say it and how you carry yourself. What is your reputation in the company? And that point about likability and impact,
yeah,
those two would seem that they go very hand in hand, but you can like someone but not be impacted by them.
Yeah,
right?
Super true.
Or even vice versa as well. It can be impacted by someone but not like them at all.
Yeah.
So there needs to be a kind of a positive ratio between the two, I think, to get like a good balance of, you know, you like this person, but you're also open to be led by them and to be impacted and inspired by them as well.
Well said.
So let's look at the data side of it now.
Yeah. So let's maybe look at something else that we do with organizations as well. So one of the interesting things that I think a lot of organizations right now are interested in is, you know, apart from wellness, there's also that idea of having more women leaders at the top. So a lot of these things are new age ideas, right? And so there are many ways to do it. So really, organizational psychologists, when we come in, we're really looking at that fine moment between the current state, the future state, and smack in the middle, how do we redesign that experience so we transform? There was an example of a client that we have in the organization's maybe about 5,000-6,000 strong, and they probably have only one female leader right at the top. And so I think there's this whole motion of, you know, how do we get more female leaders at the top? How do we understand how to make this impact and how do we progress from there? So the typical way would be, okay, let's do a workshop on, you know, raising unconscious biases so that everybody's aware about it. And what we did was we tried to do many different things before we finally launched what it is that we wanted to do. So the data around it is amazing. If a female leader outtalks a male leader, they're 46% liked less, which is huge. That's an important phenomenon over there. And then we wanted to see, okay, this data exists outside, but does it exist within the company itself? And so we decided to try that out within the company itself. What we recognized is that whenever we did these workshops and we put in data from outside of the company, they would normally say it happens in other companies, but not in our company. The other thing that we found out was every time a female leader was aggressive, they probably would say that she's emotional. And every time a male leader was aggressive, they would say he's very goal-oriented. And so a lot of times as well, companies would say this data exists outside, it's not applicable inside. We do our performance evaluations very fairly. And so what we did was we ran a social experiment within the company itself, exact same script, and we got the male leader and the female leader to say the exact same script. We also made sure that their tone was more or less the same, and we got people to come up with their likability scores and also in one word, how do you describe the person? And so they found out that the same thing was existing in the organization, and therefore it would impact how many women probably get to the top as well. And so when people in the workshops were able to see that they themselves or their colleagues were making these erroneous decisions or having these erroneous biases, they then decided that, yeah, it is definitely about time.
Anyway, it's time for a short break, but after that, I'll continue speaking to Hetal Doshi Suhana Daswani about the difference between what an HR department does and what organizational psychology can do about it. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. I'm Christine Wong, and I've been speaking to Hetal Doshi Suhana Daswani, who is an organizational psychologist as well as a certified professional coach and certified trainer. And we've been talking about organizational psychology. Now, this is to do with the psychology of an organization and looking at ways to improve it, looking at ways that you can apply data and direction and observation to how a company works together. Now, it's really interesting because the case study that you've given me have a lot to do with essentially convincing people of the fact that this isn't just a theory. This is all stuff that is practical. And to say that, you know, speech does matter, for example, yeah, to a CEO, not just in theory, but also in terms of practice when it comes to how much of your time you're spending on this and how much that technically affects, you know, how much money you're making in a certain amount of time. And then for this particular case with the fact that you're not an exception to the rule, there are biases, yeah, against, you know, the way that female leaders are perceived in response to male leaders. You have a female leader who is assertive, you have a male leader who's assertive, but he is assertive and she's bossy, right?
Yeah.
It's all about kind of taking this reality and making them aware of it on a very solid level.
Yeah, absolutely. And also driving impact, if I could add. Before running this workshop and this experiment, we asked business leaders within that company, how long do you think it is going to take to have more women at the top? And they said it would probably take another maybe about 10 years. Within that day itself, pretty much after the workshop, we got two of the male leaders who said, we're going to get this done within the next month. And so on one hand, it is about duration and that length of period of time that we're going to take to get there. On the other hand, if you do it smartly, you can actually get it done in a super, super short period of time. Obviously, the preparation and the data that you need to get prior to that is where you spend the significant amount or chunk of time as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But with the perspective shift, things can happen a lot quicker, I suppose.
Absolutely.
The thing is that I think with this kind of scenario, people would be asking, isn't that what the human resources department is for? So let's talk about that.
Okay. I don't think that's the purpose of a HR department, unfortunately. I think, you know, HR plays such a painful job, actually. They're looking after the entire architecture of the workforce. In my opinion, I think they're looking after the entire architecture. They're looking after the structure that is required to get the workforce moving in a particular direction that the company desires. So in one way of understanding, they're covering a breadth, a huge breadth. But what they probably can't do with the same level of skill set is understanding the depth. And so if they're going to try to do both the breadth and the depth at the same time, I think they're never going to arrive. So yes, I think HR functions are typically more specifically designed to form a more architectural point of view for an organization.
With a human resources department, it's as if they're laying the plans out for a building, but you're focusing on each individual brick.
Potentially, and also the dynamics. And when you say brick, it could be an individual. Sometimes within an organization, what we do is we roll out the organizational chart and we look at, as you said, the brick could be an individual, the brick could be a whole department, and we try and look at the pain points. So I think, you know, if you look at PSYOP, which is a society of IO psychologists, they will look at, we pretty much look at the pain points. And in today's day and age, what we understand about pain points is we come in and we begin to disrupt those pain points. Yeah.
Right, I see. And, you know, how does, for example, because we were talking a little bit more about the leader side of things, right? We were talking about how you can apply organizational psychology to the leaders, so the CEOs and the female leaders and such. But what about if you are an employee, that you're not necessarily in a formal leadership role? How does that apply?
Yeah, so give you an example, a classic example about restructuring. So I think as organizations transform these days, there are many components that get restructured. So say, for example, today you have a job and tomorrow you may not have a job, or you might have a completely different job. And so give you an example of a client that we're working with right now. They have just recently restructured the entire organization. It's a metamorphosis. It looks nothing like what it used to before, purely because of the whole landscape of going digital. On top of that, they have a new leader who has a reputation of being a tyrant. And then she's female, of course. So you know how the unfortunate lingo goes, right? Oh my God, we have a female leader. Oh my God, we know she's a tyrant. And oh my God, I don't even know whether I have a job. And so we co-created a design. This is where I guess HR and org psychs may differ. And I think, you know, I think HR is also evolving. They probably overlap and kind of do the stuff that we're doing. We do it the other way around as well. But this is where we merge together, HR and ourselves. We sat down and we tried to understand what was exactly going to go on. And so we look at it as predictability will lead to profitability. So if you're able to predict what is going to happen with the employees, you're going to be very profitable in the course that you're going to go for. And so we began to predict the kind of emotions. We began to predict the kind of things that they were going to say. And pretty much the predictions were all true. So what we decided to do was again, current state and desired state. We tried to look at the middle part of it, which is how do we design this transformation so that we can disrupt the whole process? And instead of saying, I hate this woman, or I really feel that she has a poor reputation, or I don't know what I'm going to do in my life, we disrupt it to, I had no idea that she was this amazing. Oh, wow. You know what? I think she's going to be as legendary as any other male who's come in. Or, it's okay if I've shifted my job. I'm still going to be quite enthusiastic with the way that I lead my life and my work. So we came up with a couple of things. Number one, we got them we bought them all a book on Who Moved My Cheese. And we got them to all share experiences about the number of times that cheese was taken away from them prior to this moment. And we got them to recall years later what that experience meant for them. And then we introduced to them the notion that you might have your cheese moved again. So going back to all the data points in your life and all the times that you thought it was going to be horrible, but then it ended up being amazing, how do you want to apply it to this moment, knowing that opportunities, or crisis rather, is the birthplace of opportunity? So what decision do you want to make before you open your lettuce? And so they had already preset the decision before opening the envelopes, which is a completely different design to what we've conventionally been doing. However, this design was only possible because we paid a lot of attention to, again, the mental state, the emotional state, and the behavioral state. Being able to predict that helped us to become profitable. And really, from an employee standpoint, going back home and having that emotion versus what we predicted could have been a lot worse, you know, also helps the family. So it's not just about how you feel at home, but what kind of energy you take back home with your family as well. And we were able to get this department moving super quickly as well.
It seems to me that organizational psychology really has a lot to do with a paradigm shift, right? And making sure that you give people an idea of how to look at things from a different perspective in order to make the most of the opportunities that they have, right? And that in and of itself makes the whole process of having, you know, more control at your job, more meaning or growth or communication or anything like that, or connection. It's not just about, you know, working harder or working smarter or anything like that, but it's about looking at your situation and looking at how you approach that.
Yeah.
And looking at that from a different perspective as well, I think.
Absolutely. So if I could share, you know, there is a transformation model. So, you know, when you said earlier, it is a paradigm shift. I would probably call it a transformation shift. So, and it's not many a times in your life that you would have moments of transformation. You know, many times people say, you have to change. But, you know, change is completely different from transformation. Change is incremental, like from a dog to a puppy to a dog. But transformation is from caterpillar to butterfly, from being potentially angry to being completely joyful. That's transformation. And so we look at transformation models, what it means when, what does it take for a human being to experience the true benefits of transformation? And in that process, actually, there are two principles. One is of death and rebirth. And so your old ideas need to die. The old you needs to die. And then you need to recreate that. But nobody can tell you that that needs to be done for yourself. That is an experience that you need to have for yourself. And so when we design it, we allow that experience to take place rather than forcing it to take place. So that experience must be intrinsic, not external. So Who Moved My Cheese was purely designed to get them to experience a journey for themselves, for example. So death and rebirth is one huge component of it. The other part is pain and pleasure as well. So how do we evoke pain and how do we bring out the pleasure in a single moment is also something that requires a high level of skill in being able to design. And not just for one person, we have to guarantee that, you know, 150 people who are in front of us need to come out guaranteed. So for example, if it's caterpillar, guaranteed they need to come out as a butterfly. It's not by chance that they do. So the design needs to be guaranteed to take them into that final state as well.
Right, I see. So, you know, with these obstacles in front of you, is there a difference in the way that you would apply organizational psychology to a small business and a big business? Is there a difference in how that would work? Because I would imagine that it has to be on a much larger scale for bigger businesses and stuff like that as well.
No, I think you can apply this. I think you can apply this to a team of three.
Mm-hmm.
You can apply this to a team of 50,000.
So as long as you find like the methodology, it doesn't really matter necessarily what industry or scale or whatever the business is. You can kind of find a similar approach for each of them, you would say.
I think ultimately, as long as it's a human being who has a current state and a future state and needs an in-between to be designed so that they can transform, there is a space for psychology. It might be organizational psychology. It could be, you know, one-on-one coaching. It could be even, you know, cognitive psychologists who come in. But as long as there's a human being with these two states and they are in a flux as to how to get to the next state, I think there's huge, enormous values that you could bring into that particular space. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. That's actually about all the time we have. But thank you so much for speaking to me about organizational psychology. Anyways, you've been listening to me, Christine Wong, speaking to Hetal Doshi Suhana Daswani, organizational psychologist. If you've missed any of this interview, do listen to the podcast and download it on our BFM app, available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. You've been listening to Raise Your Game on Enterprise. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.